Well, today for the sermon, I would like to share with you a little bit about the story of the Buddha's life and awakening and his initial teaching. I really love this story. There's so many parts of it that I find inspiring, and I know that most of us have probably heard the story before. But as you know, the person who we now call the Buddha, he was born over 2,500 years ago in northern India. And the term Buddha means an awakened one. So when he was born, one thing I love about the story is that he was not enlightened. He was not born enlightened, just like all of us. And he was not born as some kind of a god or anything, you know, other than just a human being. So I really appreciate that as an inspiration for all of us. He was, however, he was born into a life of great wealth and privilege. His father was a king. So even though he did grow up with wealth and privilege, although actually I think maybe because he grew up with wealth and privilege, he realized that money, power, possessions did not bring true or lasting happiness. And as he matured as a teenager and then into his 20s, he went through what I feel like is a very common experience for teenagers, you know, those of us who have been them and have them. I think a lot of us, when we are in those years, really start questioning what's going on. You know, we start looking around us at our society and saying, you know, am I really aligned with the way my culture is living? You know, is this true to my own heart? So that's what the Buddha did. He looked around and he said, you know, this is just not the way I want to live. It's just very, you know, it's just so focused on material possessions. Now, I think that's interesting for us to realize, because a lot of us think now we're focused on material possessions, and of course we are, but it's a good reminder that the human heart really hasn't changed that much in over 2,000 years. So, you know, when I read the Buddha's teachings, it's like, you know, he talks about how, you know, this is a generation that's like lost. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there was, you know, people were saying that 2,500 years ago. People are too focused on the material world. So much against his father's wishes, he decided to become a wandering ascetic. And his father had realized that he was heading in that direction and was not at all happy about it. He, of course, wanted him to, he was a prince, he wanted him to be a king and take over the kingdom. So it's said that actually on the last night before Siddhartha was going to leave the palace, his father pulled out all the stops. He had this party, he had dancing girls, he had wine, you know, wine, women's song, food, you know, just a big kind of orgy, thinking this will convince him to stay, you know. Well, it was the opposite, you know. Siddhartha, well, I mean, I think he got drawn into it a little bit, but then as the night wore on, he just was kind of like, oh, yuck, you know, this is just, this excess is just, you know, really makes me want to hit the road. So he hit the road. And he wandered mostly with a group of ascetics. And in India at that time, you know, there was definitely a spiritual belief among the ascetics that, you know, the problem was the body. And so we need to overcome the body to become spiritual. So there was, you know, very harsh beliefs. And people would really not eat, they'd hardly eat anything, like the least you can eat. It reminded me of kind of you, I know when I was in the 70s, I heard of the breatharians, you know, we don't need this material stuff, you know, we're just going to breathe and, you know, I mean, it doesn't really work. Not that I tried it, but I mean, you know. But that was kind of the tendency of what was going on, is that they would wander, they would, you know, he studied with lots of spiritual teachers, he, you know, denied and mortified his body, hardly eating at all, fasting. And he did this for 6 years. So he was a very determined young man, I have to say. And then after these 6 years, He really realized that he didn't feel that he was any closer to understanding the true meaning of life or to reaching enlightenment than when he had left home. So he decided to leave this group that he was with and go off by himself. He was determined to go to whatever extremes he might need to go to reach enlightenment, to understand fully the meaning of life and true inner happiness. So Siddhartha sat down under a fig tree and was attempting to bring his actually very significant developed concentration inward. He was determined to just sit until he, you know, saw things clearly. But he had been, you know, he had been depriving himself for so long. He was really, really not in good shape. He was very, 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 very emaciated, undernourished. And as he sat there trying to focus his attention, you know, he realized he might actually die because he was so emaciated. And then a very, very beautiful thing happened. It's a very beautiful part of the story. There was a young woman who lived nearby, and she saw the Buddha. She saw this spiritual seeker sitting under the tree, and her heart was just moved. She could see that this person was, you know, at death's door. And she went home, and she, actually one of the stories I read, she apparently had a lot of really good cows. And so she had this very rich milk that she got from her cows, and she cooked it together with rice, and she made up this very nourishing drink for the Buddha. So she brought this back to the Buddha, except he wasn't the Buddha yet. Oops, Siddhartha. She brought it back to Siddhartha. And at first, you know, his long training as an ascetic, when she came and brought it towards him, he was almost, you know, in a delirium. He almost was, you know, not even conscious. But as he saw it being offered to him, at first he thought, no, no, I'm probably getting really close to a spiritual breakthrough here. You know, I don't think I'm going to, I don't want to give in to this, you know. But then as the story goes, there was something in him that was really moved and stirred by her generosity and her kindness, and he allowed himself to receive the offering. And I just think this is such a beautiful thing for us to contemplate, you know, the human connectedness, the story about the spiritual friendships, you know, that we are all together and we need each other, and that actually this young woman's kindness and generosity and compassion actually saved the Buddha's life and allowed him, as he drank the nourishing milk and rice, he felt the strength returning to his body. You know, he could just feel this, his self getting the health and the nourishment that he needed. And then it is said that at that point, he realized how important it was that we care for the body, not that we deny and try to pretend like we don't have a body, we can just be spirit. It didn't make sense to overcome nature. We're part of nature. And said at that moment, he saw clearly the middle path, which is the path between the extremes. So he realized that the extreme of self-denial was not wisdom and was not a good idea. And he saw that the extreme of self-indulgence, like his father had tried to tempt him with, was not the way. And he resolved to find the middle path. So at this point, Siddhartha, with his renewed energy, was going to sit through the night. And he was paying very close attention to exactly what his own inner experience was, which is really what meditation invites us to do, is to really pay close attention to our own inner experience. And as any of you know who have done any, you know, long periods of meditation or retreats, it's not an easy thing. It's not real pleasant when we start really looking at all the thoughts and all the feelings. I mean, we spend a lot of time as a culture trying to get away from that. There's a lot of distractions, and a lot of us like to keep really busy because it's not easy to turn inward. So he had a really rough night. He was beset by intense fears, self-doubts, confusion. Sometimes it's described as the demon Mara taunting him and telling him he was not worthwhile, he was unworthy, who did he think he was, bringing up everything he'd ever done that was wrong, you know. It was really just an onslaught. But what he did in face of all that was he resolved even stronger to sit still with this, to turn towards these voices, these inner voices that were challenging him and taunting him. And he sat very, very still. He got very, very quiet, and he simply turned towards them. And then he really could see the causes of suffering. It said that he just saw through all that causes human suffering. And it said that he said, you know, be gone. Be gone. I see the truth of who you are, all these doubts and all this fear. I take my stand on being at peace with whatever arises. And at that, all these forces or Mara disappeared, gave up. And then he realized that he had seen through to truth, and he was an enlightened being. His friends actually returned, and it said that they looked at him, and he was so radiant, and he looked so different. It was like, what's gone on? What, you know? They thought he was. They didn't know what he was. And he said, you know, I have woken up. I see clearly the truth of existence. And they encouraged him to teach. Which he wasn't sure about doing at first because he thought, this is kind of obscure. I don't know if anybody's going to really get it. But he did teach. And his first sermon was the Four Noble Truths. And the first one being that there is suffering in life. The second truth being that there are causes of suffering. And what the Buddha saw was that the causes of suffering, of our suffering, is that we don't want things to be the way they are. We don't accept the way things are. We either want what we don't have, or we don't want what we do have, or we think if we just get that, it'd be better, or if we got rid of this, it'd be better. And he saw that that was really the cause of all of our suffering. And then he broke through to the place of the cessation of suffering. He broke through to a place beyond craving, beyond wanting anything to be other than the way it is, and found the place of profound peace or nirvana. And the fourth truth that he taught was that there is a path leading to the end of suffering. There is a path that leads to the cessation of suffering that we can follow. His teaching on the path is about ethical conduct, about never doing harm to any living being. And it also teaches the mindfulness and concentration of turning inward to see the truth of where our own suffering lies and being willing to see what the causes of our own suffering is. One thing I really love about what the Buddha said is that he said, do not believe anything I say because I said it. Come and see for yourself. And that is the invitation from the Buddha for us to look inward and to find the truth for ourselves, which I feel like is such a lovely overlap with our Unitarian Universalist ideals, that this church, you know, which is why I was so drawn here and continue to be drawn here, is that this church says, come and see for yourself, and that everyone's views are respected, are valued. No one person has the truth for anyone else. And we're encouraged, you know, as a group of spiritual seekers to find our own truth and be a lamp unto ourselves. The Buddha continued teaching for almost another 50 years. He died at the age of 80, and he continued to explore, to teach how what is suffering and what alleviates suffering. He taught loving kindness and compassion because he saw the suffering of hatred and cruelty. He taught a path of not harming others, knowing that whenever we harm another, we harm ourselves. So he taught really the same ethics that that the UUs value and teach. To strive for a world community of peace and justice, to respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are all a part. And in times that are unsettled, such as we are now living, that many of us feel are very unsettled, when we might be afraid of the future and what it's going to bring, I think the Buddha really invites us to turn inward and to cultivate an inner peace so that we might contribute to bringing peace to the world. So as one of my teachers always would say, I offer these words in the hope they may be of some benefit.